Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio.
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 216 of Nerd Pride Radio. 216? Six cubed. That one was easy. Okay. Ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me.
How are you doing?
I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D / Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus. There's like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to hang around about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. And my co-host this week is... it's Aiden, because I didn't think of coming up with a clever nonsense co-host. So it'll just be Aiden, because he's no nonsense. That's whenever someone says Aiden, the first word that comes to mind, no nonsense. That's right. But you know what? Enough of this. It's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, because this is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list. And the very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record.
You lucky dogs.
All right, straight into it. Oh, by the way, today's a snow day, so...
A way too much snow day, yes.
Yeah, they kept telling us it was going to be like a foot and a half of snow, and...
They underestimated.
It was supposed to start at 6 o'clock last night, and at 6 o'clock, nothing. At 9 o'clock, nothing. At midnight, nothing. Woke up at 5:30 this morning. I got out of bed to go pee.
With a light little...
Yeah, a little dusting. Just a dusting of snow outside. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to work today. By 7:30, couldn't see anything. I mean, just complete whiteout conditions, total blizzard. It has not stopped snowing and blowing since then. So big chunks of the country are going through this weird weather as well. So when we get to listener betrayal, we'll find out if anyone's got any good stories about it. So, let's see. But enough of my babbling. Oh, I know what we're going to do. Today is actually going to be kind of a fingertip sort of episode because I didn't really...
Because
I didn't really develop any of these topics thoroughly. But I'm actually going to put section headings on them as if these were fully developed. So they're going to be little short things, but you'll still get the intro music and that'll make it cool. So we go into my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games. If it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. Hopefully later today, we're playing some more Starfinder because, you know, we're all home. We got nothing else to do.
Speak for yourself. I'd rather play Pathfinder.
Shut up. God, every time lately we talk about Starfinder, Aiden's always, we should play some Pathfinder, as if there's no difference between the games. He's a jerk.
Excuse me? One happens on one defined planet.
And that planet's gone in Starfinder!
Mm. Wow, actually, technically, in Pathfinder... In Pathfinder, there are multiple planets. The jungle planet of Castrovel, from which the Formians and the Elves come, is there in Pathfinder, and there are rules for traveling from planet to planet within the Pathfinder universe, so you suck. So, anyway, as well as a bunch of other planets as well. I mean, Castrovel's not the only one they mentioned, but... anyway, we're thinking about doing that, and actually, I was going to put together a kind of history of God Ball, because I keep talking about God Ball every episode, and so I was going to kind of put together this coherent history of its development, and then I realized, I've talked about it quite a lot. Maybe I'm going to save that. So what I'm doing now is just taking notes. So this is me using a whole segment to tell you about a future segment I may do somewhere down the line. Because I think the whole process is very interesting. I really like what we're doing with it. And again, for those who aren't familiar with God Ball, my buddy Dave and I have been developing a board game called God Ball, and it is this weird mix of a strategic soccer match sort of set up on an actual board game, but using godly powers that come from a deck that is vaguely reminiscent of Magic the Gathering. It's not really Magic the Gathering, but it has kind of that same sort of flavor of laying out cards. And it's a really fun game, and it's got lots and lots of flaws, but we've been developing it over time and playtesting it, and so we're working on different aspects of it. And I personally think the journey that we're taking to get there, even if this ultimately never goes anywhere, which I think it will, because, I mean, ultimately, if nothing else, Dave and I and the various people we have playtesting and assisting and helping to design stuff, we are all going to work together to come up with a finished playable game at some point. And that will be super exciting. Hopefully, it's a finished playable published game, but, you know, we'll see how that part works out. There's a lot of things that have to happen to either get a game publisher interested or to get a successful Kickstarter going, or there's lots of things that have to go on to make something this complicated a reality, and we'll see if we can do it. So anyway, that's what we're working on. Like I say, and I think it's an instructional process, and so I just need to start taking more notes. I mean, we have a whole history of everything we've done, because if you go to the forums, there's a whole God Ball section where it's nothing but us talking about each playtest, talking about how we're going to develop from here, and on and on. And so certainly someone could try and follow that. But like I said, I think it'll be useful to put together something just to say, hey, look, here's the path we took. Here's some lessons that can be learned from that. And that's the hard part for me, is actually learning lessons. But anyway, again, this is just me kind of cloud talking about stuff that I'm going to do later. I don't even know why I'm doing a whole segment on it. You know what? We should move on to a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you are very, very close. This is to talk about my snowblower.
Why is this in a nerd culture report?
Because it's about me and my nerd culture. I don't know. Because I already have something completely different. I don't know.
Maybe this should be a nerd winter report.
Yeah, this is my nerd weather report.
This is his nerd snowblower report.
So, here's the thing, is I went out because, you know, we know that there's a blizzard coming, so, hey, let's go get the snowblower ready and make sure it's working. And my snowblower is always good for a season, and then at the start of the following season, I always have to make sure that it is completely drained of gasoline, and then I have to disassemble whatever the filter trap is on the fuel line at the back. I have to disassemble that and clean out the filter, and then once I reassemble it and put new gas back in it, everything works just fine. And obviously check the oil and that kind of stuff. I've had to, you know, drain it out and change the oil before and all that. But that's my yearly maintenance, is check the oil and then drain the gasoline, clean it, put it all back. We're good. And so this time, we went out, me and Noah went out to take care of the snowblower last night, and I went to go drain it, and there was no gasoline in it, which makes it sound like I completely just ran it out of gas last time I used it and then never bothered to refill it because we didn't need it. But then I disassembled the back and got that filter piece out and went to go clean it out, and it was already clean, which indicates to me that, oh, wait, I think I might have realized what happened. Okay. I was going to say, it indicates to me that did I actually empty it out and clean it out at the end of last season because I was being proactive and responsible? Because for those of you who know me, that seems really, really unlikely, doesn't it? But now part of me is wondering, oh, wait, did we see snow coming? And so I went ahead and I cleaned it out and got it ready, but then snow never came, so I never gassed it up. Maybe that's what happened last season, is that I'd never actually had to use it last year. Oh, okay, you know what? Never mind. We don't need to go any further with this. Mystery solved. I'm sure that's exactly what happened. Like I say, I was sitting here proud of myself thinking, wow, was I really good enough to actually do maintenance on it at the end of the season when I didn't actually need it? Cause it's really not like me. So no, it turns out that I did not. All right. Good. We're all covered. See, short segments. Next up, Science Corner.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. Okay, here comes the part where I should really learn to take better notes and, you know, do some research. But that's why I told you this was going to be kind of fingertips-ish in that these aren't fully developed segments. I was listening to Curious Cases with Rutherford and Fry. It's a BBC science podcast.
Nerd!
It is one of, I think, three different BBC science podcasts I listen to on a regular basis.
Oh my god, are you okay?
I love them. Okay. So in Curious Cases, they were talking about lasers, and so a viewer...
Lasers.
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 A viewer wrote in to ask them if you could actually have a laser powerful enough to put a spot on the moon, like laser pointer at the moon, and actually have a visible red spot show up there, or whatever color. And so they researched what it would take to do that, and do we have any lasers that can? Now, look, I know that there's laser projects where people bounce lasers off reflectors that have been set up on the moon, and we measure the exact distance to the moon on a regular basis, and we find out that over time it is slowly, on average, drifting away from us, et cetera, et cetera. So I know that we do bounce lasers off the moon, but literally just to do like a laser pointer spot on the moon, what would it take? And again, I should have taken notes. I think this is where they came up with like a 1.5 gigawatt laser is what they actually needed. But it might be actually more than that when you account for the flickering effect of our atmosphere and this kind of stuff. But they did find someone with essentially the most powerful working laser on Earth, and it is a 10 petawatt laser. 10 petawatts! All right? Do you have any conception of what 10 petawatts is
Dad,
like?
Dad?
Yeah?
Dad, you're talking fiction again. You're just describing the plot of Real Genius.
Yeah, no, okay, so you remember Real Genius when they fired a 5 megawatt laser. That was their goal, is they wanted to get to 5 megawatts, and I think...
Didn't that thing blast all the way across campus and threw a billboard and down?
Right, and so by the end of it, it was not just a 5 megawatt laser. I think they were up to past 6 or something. That their goal was 5, and they wound up surpassing their goal, and they were so thrilled with themselves for
this. According to that movie, couldn't a 5-megawatt laser fired from space melt a dude?
Right, exactly. A 5-megawatt laser fired from space would vaporize a person. That was their plan. Now, whether that's realistic or not, I don't know. But when you think of a 10-petawatt laser, I forgot that, oh yeah, wait, it goes mega... then giga, and then tera. Oh, peta is just past tera. So this would be a laser 2 billion times more powerful than the theoretical laser from Real Genius.
So it's like the dueling laser from Futurama.
Right, and you can guess that a 5-megawatt laser was used in the movie because in the mid-80s when they did that, no one had ever heard of a five-megawatt laser.
They could have used a gigawatt laser.
Right. Well, that's actually when they were talking about the 1.5 gigawatt laser that you would need to put a spot on the moon, I think someone actually made a gigawatt joke, or like you could see that they hinted towards that joke, but then they're very conservative and British, so they didn't actually fully go for the whole Back to the Future reference, but they should have, because that would have been super funny. So 2 billion times more powerful than that, and they actually watched it being fired. Which in a laboratory under very controlled conditions and literally fired for the tiniest fraction of a second. And in that firing was so loud that they had to completely dampen all the audio for the podcast, because apparently they hadn't had hearing protections. It's louder than a gunshot, louder than rocket engines. It was this snap of the laser vaporizing not just the target, but the atmosphere around it. And so that was the thing, is they're like, yeah, yeah, we could certainly put a spot on the moon with this thing. That is not a problem.
Now the question is, can we annihilate the moon with it?
No, the problem is that on its way to the moon...
Would it punch a hole in the ozone?
It would ionize the atmosphere, so it would set the atmosphere on fire for the entire path of the laser, thus creating... literally a lightning bolt, because it would just be ionized atmosphere, just plasma surrounding this laser's path. So they would set the atmosphere on fire for a full lightning path from the ground to outer space, you know, and thus pass that on its way to the moon. I'm like, that's cooler than crap. That is just the most amazing thing I've ever heard of.
Escalated the same way that XKCD escalated the hairdryer in a metal box scenario.
Exactly. I'm telling you.
Oh, my God.
When you're hearing this woman, this scientist who runs the laser that was demonstrating things for them, you could just hear her gleefully describing the effects of this laser. If it was, I mean, like, here's a scientist living her dream, like ultimate cosmic power all contained in this little laser box. And
now, what
I don't know how big the laser box was. But,
one
assumes that they'd be vaporized. I can't imagine you wouldn't be vaporized by that sort of energy.
How much power does it take to vaporize flesh and bone? To literally make flesh and bone go instantaneously from solid to gas?
Mm.
To, by definition, vaporize.
I have no idea. But you have just created a research project for yourself. I want a five-page paper ready by next week.
Well, I'm just going to go to Google and see what Google has to say about vaporizing people.
Fine. So, yeah, you're right. Alexa?
How much power would it take to vaporize a human being?
That's pretty cool. All right, you see what you can find out about that. I'm also going to continue a little bit on our science corner. The other thing that I came up with, and again, I should really take notes, is a chess match... a series of chess matches, actually, between Alpha Zero and Stockfish 8. I had never heard either of those terms before, so if you don't know what they are, then you're
I have a page.
Okay.
When I Googled how much energy would it take to vaporize a human being...
Okay, what does it say?
The first entry was a page out of the Mad Scientist Handbook, mm-hmm. So we're on the right track, at least.
Excellent. Keep us posted. All right. So, Alpha Zero and Stockfish 8 both play chess. Stockfish 8 is considered the premier chess-playing software, algorithm, computer, whatever it is. But Stockfish 8 is considered the ultimate chess-playing machine at the moment. And Alpha Zero is a construct created by Google... that rather than being programmed with all of the moves of chess and all the possibilities and telling it to examine, because Stockfish basically examines, you know, 24 moves ahead or however many it can analyze as quickly as it goes. It analyzes, you know, umpteen moves ahead and then picks the best possible course of action, etc., etc. Whereas AlphaZero was just given, hey, here's the rules of chess. Go play and see what happens. And it was a learning algorithm that, okay, so it knows the rules of chess. So it basically is teaching itself to play just through trial and error, and it plays against itself over and over and over, billions of times, trillions of times, until it figures out strategies that seem to work more often. And it's not necessarily always looking ahead at future moves and making analysis like that. It's just looking at, look, in these situations, these are the moves that have tended to win for me. It's more of an instinctive sort of thing. And, again, man, I wish I wrote all this down, but I saw this like a month and a half ago, and it's just been sitting here on the list for a while. But I believe it was something along the lines of AlphaZero taught itself to play chess, and over a course of an 8-hour period or, an 18-hour period, it was something around a day. That it takes to an order of magnitude close to a day, where it teaches itself to play chess, and then sets down to a tournament with Stockfish, the premier chess-playing machine in the world, and after X number of games, proceeds to wind up beating Stockfish every time it plays it. Like, either they come to a draw, which is most often, or if one of them is going to win, it's like, you know, 90-some percent of the time, almost 100% of the time, it's going to be AlphaZero winning over Stockfish 8, which I just thought was amazing. That it's absolutely self-taught. That, you know, it's not like we told it what to do. It's just, here's the rules, now go experiment and see what works best for you. And, you know, you give it a couple of days, and suddenly it's better than anybody in the world. That's crazy. Okay, hold on. We have a mad scientist update here.
Not complete research yet, but I do have a breakthrough. To break down just one mole of oxygen-hydrogen bonds, which amounts to about 18 grams of water,
mm-hmm.
It would take 460 kilojoules of energy.
Okay.
Which is the equivalent of about a 2,000-pound car hitting a wall at 70 miles per hour, focused on just those 18 grams of water.
Okay. So, that's 18 grams. So
and that's 460 kilojoules. So the math works out that it would take... there it is. 3 gigajoules to vaporize a person. That would be nice. Enough. That would be enough to melt, to completely melt 5,000 pounds of steel, simulate a lightning bolt.
Okay, so
now I just gotta convert kilojoules.
Right.
And
look. I don't know how. Yeah, exactly. I don't know how a 10 petawatt laser translates into gigajoules. But again, peta is a million times more than giga, so therefore, I'm gonna guess that this laser will do it. If you get anything further, you know, certainly update us. But I think we have got way more than enough energy to vaporize a person. That sounds awesome. So anyway, let's see. Although I suppose any laser would provide enough energy given enough time.
Not a laser pointer.
Well, again, if you could focus all of that energy and keep it contained, then yes, it might take you,
yes,
you know.
Any laser condensed down to an infinitely small point.
No. If you could find a way to contain its energy and keep it from dissipating as light and heat, if you could keep it contained on the target, then, you know, it might take you, you know, 400 trillion AAA batteries. But, you know, eventually you'd get there, right?
You ready for this?
Yeah, go ahead.
3 gigajoules comes out to a measly 833 kilowatts per hour.
Can I quickly
kilowatt hour?
Can I quickly make a half flashback to a previous section?
Yes. What previous section?
Gaming table.
Oh yeah. All right. Hold on. It's our gaming table. Go ahead.
This is also kind of science table corner. Sorry. In a game called Bond Breaker, you play a proton or an oxygen molecule, and you go around solving puzzles. And one of the challenge levels, there are such things known as muons, which are particles that are so, electrons that are so heavy that when they start orbiting the molecule H2, it bonds the protons into helium. Similar to how the sun makes hydrogen into helium.
Yeah, see, now he was talking about muons earlier this week, and he taught me a few things because up till now, I've only known muons as a subatomic particle that invariably gets listed as we're talking about subatomic particles and someone's giving examples of them will list muons and gluons. They always put them together because they rhyme. But I've never known exactly what a muon is, and I don't know that I still do. But, yeah, that was more information than I had. So I was happy to learn something. That's pretty cool. All right. We are done with the science corner.
We're not done. Hold on. Okay. I have the number.
Okay.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
3,000, 10,000.
He's counting on his fingers, people.
100,000. a million, 10 million, 100 million, billion, 10 million. The laser we're talking about is about 8 billion times more than what's required to vaporize.
Although, wait. Take 8 billion. Take 8 billion and divide by, what it means is, cause he found it in kilowatt hours, and he's converting kilowatt hours into this.
Roughly.
Right. Well, so that would be, if it's a 10 petawatt laser, you're looking at your conversion there of 8 billion times as much as we need would be if that laser fired for an hour.
Right.
So if you take 1 hour and divide it by 8 billion.
It is still quadrillions, quintillion times more than what we need.
So I'm guessing now, and it, look.
We have a death ray!
Is it possible that our math is off by a little bit?
But doesn't it make Probably. The situation sound incredible?
But it does sound like if you focused that laser on a human being.
They're dead.
For a second, 1 second would probably be far more time than you need to vaporize that person with that 10 petawatt laser. That's what it sounds like.
We have a death ray.
Right, we have a death ray. Now we just need a supervillain to wield it. That's all.
Do we really need a supervillain, or do we need a hero to live long enough to see himself become the villain?
Oh, that's pretty good. Yeah, because eventually that's going to happen.
Right, I mean, if he doesn't die.
Okay, guess what?
And now for something completely different.
That's right, stuff I just don't have a category for yet. And let me tell you what, whenever I go to silence there, because I'm leaving a space to... Holy crap, I am being really loud. I am sorry, if I've been blowing your guys' ears out through this whole episode, I am sorry. I can see that this is clipping off the top. So I've been way too loud. Whenever it goes to silence and I leave a space there to insert music later... Aiden starts dancing to the non-existent music. And so this time, he's doing this kind of headbangy sort of thing as he's dancing to what he thinks is music. And I'm like, dude, it's just John Cleese saying now for something completely different. He's like, oh, even better. And then he's just, again, starts up thrashing. So to me, very, very funny. And it's one of those things that you had to be there, which means I'll describe it anyway and just keep you guys wondering why I do this stuff. All right. The reason I'm here... Now for something completely different. We played Hangman over the holidays. And...
Was it your holiday Hangman?
It was, in fact, holiday Hangman. Wow, you are perceptive. And we do this every year. We put up Hangman on the whiteboard outside our office. And a lot of them, it's puzzles that are holiday related, but sometimes they're not. Because we found out if they're all holiday related, it's way too easy. But the idea is... We put up a Hangman puzzle, and it's not like playing traditional Hangman where you just put up one word. It's like we put up an entire movie quote or a phrase or, you know, it's not like we want to stump people. We want them to get it, but they're competing with each other on who can get it first. And it's a lot of fun. So everyone that shows up gets to guess one letter, and then if your letter is not in it, we hang part of Santa or whatever it is we're hanging that week. And if the letter is in it, then you have 5 seconds on your own to guess. If you can't guess, all right, now it's somebody else's. Now, as people are guessing letters, you can solve, except for that little 5 second window, someone got a letter, so they got that 5 second window where the puzzle is all theirs to solve. Outside of those, though, anyone can solve it at any time. So if you've showed up and you've given your letter, whether you got a letter in it or not, you can still hang out and wait. And eventually, someone's going to put something in, and if they can't guess it, you can steal it out from under them. And people have a really good time with this. It's a lot of fun. But, invariably, we have a group of people every year who...
I'm a step outside real quick to get a picture.
Oh, yeah, you go get some snow pics. Go. We have a group of people who are just absolutely terrified of the idea of giving a letter. Like, that's Aiden going outside if you can hear the door.
Hi, guys!
All right. So, and he's not really going outside because we can barely get the front door open.
I'm just going to stick my phone out there for a second.
So, we play Hangman, and again, there's some people who just, they refuse to give letters. They just refuse to play. They refuse to be any part of this. And it's not that they think it's a waste of time or anything. It's that they just don't want to give a letter. And even when we say, oh, come on, you would really help us out. It's never me doing it because I'm always running the board. It's other people who are guessing. And, you know, they get to a point where they're stumped and they just need someone to throw in a letter. Just, you know, help them out because they can't, any of them can't give more letters. So they need someone to just throw in a letter so they can keep playing. And so they'll grab people and they're like, oh, come on, please, please, please. You got to help us out. Just throw a letter, any letter. It doesn't matter what you do. Even if you're wrong, just throw something in. And people absolutely refuse. They're like, no, no, I can't. And they always make up some excuse and then they wander away. And that's always bugged me. And there's some of them, like, doctors more often, you can count on the actual medical doctors in our building to either refuse to play, or if they do, they're going to throw in a letter that they know is bullshit, like Q or X or J, something that they know is extremely rare and likely not in the puzzle at all. Like, they're intentionally sabotaging it. And why? And in the case of doctors, I always assumed it's because they're afraid of looking stupid. They're doctors and they're, wow, that is a lot of snow. All right. They're doctors and so they're used to being in charge of stuff and they're used to knowing everything. And so here they come to play Holiday Hangman and they're afraid of being embarrassed on some stupid little puzzle like this.
Can I just point something out to the audience real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
After reviewing this picture I just took, I realized that we have a hill across from our house, across the street, and that small hill has train tracks on it.
Yeah.
We have a front step.
Uh-huh.
And a slanted lawn.
Yeah.
Going down in the street, then it goes up onto the hill on all the tracks. I took this picture and realized everything's level out there.
Nice.
There's nothing left.
Yeah, we're waiting for things to stop blowing just long enough for the plows to come through. All right, so anyway, so I've always blamed this whole doctor effect on Hangman on the idea that they're afraid of not knowing everything. They're afraid of looking stupid. It's the same reason that doctors quite often refuse to come to me for help with their computers. I'm the computer guy, and they refuse to ask for help. And the times that I do have to help them with things...
I did not go to college for 8 years and get a medical degree to be shown up by some guy at a desk.
So the times that I do go to help them, quite often they are grateful for the help, but they also have to keep making comments like, oh yeah, I knew that. Oh, well, no, I tried that. Okay, I did. No, I did that. I did. It's, no, you didn't. You obviously didn't. That's why I'm here. If you had done all this, it would be fixed by
really,
now.
Really, really. You didn't turn it on, and you turn it off and then on again, and it only works when I do it?
Yeah, and I don't say that to them because I don't want to, it's not my business to humiliate
Yancey
people who need help.
It.
Yes, Yancey would. But it's, but, it's this idea of not wanting to look dumb. But then there's a bunch of other people who are not doctors who also absolutely refuse. And I realized that, you know what? In their case, and maybe even in the doctor's cases as well, it's social anxiety. It is, I mean, literally, it's a stupid game of Hangman. And those of us who are playing the game, we are all well aware that there's nothing to be lost by giving an answer, whether you guess the letter or don't guess the letter, whether you hang Santa or you know, you fail to guess the puzzle. Nobody thinks weird about anybody for any of that. We're just playing a game and we're having a good time. And there are plenty of times where we get out there and there's lots of, you know, regular puzzle players who are all deep into this who get stumped for a long time. And it just happens. And we all know that. But for these people who are casually passing by, and we're trying to rope them into playing with us, the social anxiety of that situation, the idea that they have to make a choice and that their choice has consequences in this game that they don't completely understand the dynamics of. I mean, they know how to play Hangman, but they don't necessarily understand the dynamics of all these people hanging out over their breaks and trying to guess, you know, word puzzles out in the hallway.
Awesome.
And this was a learning experience for me because, I mean, I understand that there is such a thing as social anxiety. But I didn't, until Holiday Hangman this year, and finally putting it together that, oh, that's why these people don't want to play. It's not that they're busy. It's not that they think we're being silly. It's not that, for most of them, it's literally that they are scared to death at the idea of having to choose a letter in front of all these people, and then they don't know what happens if I choose the wrong letter. Are people going to be upset with me? Are they going to make fun of me? Are people, and which, by the way, the people who play very infrequently, most of the time that they do choose a letter, and they're forced to like that, most of the time, they do choose what an experienced player would consider a stupid letter. But you know what? That's fine, and nobody really cares. But you know, just me saying that just reinforces their inclination that, oh god, but if I guess the wrong letter, people are going to think I'm stupid. Or if I do guess the letter, but then I can't guess the puzzle, they're going to think, even though there's five people already standing there who can't guess the puzzle either, but if I get a letter and then I can't guess the puzzle, then they're going to think I'm dumb or that I did something wrong or that, and they panic about it. And so they would rather just not take a chance and they walk off. And again, it's something that I've known social anxiety is a thing, but until putting it together with this, the idea that their social anxiety is so crippling that they can't even just walk by and go, I don't know, B. That they can't even do that much because they're so panicked about what everyone else is going to think. That was really enlightening for me because that is not part of my experience whatsoever. I am not shy. I am, believe it or not, I'm an introvert.
Ha 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 ha! Woo! What a good sentence to come in on. You're funny.
I am
the podcast guy, am an introvert.
Right, because I like doing things on my own. I like quiet, introspective stuff. I mean, I'm not afraid of social interaction. I enjoy social interaction as far as it goes. I love playing games and I love interacting in lots of different ways, but it's not when I need to recharge, when I need to recharge my batteries and feel like, feel like I'm relaxing and, you know, centering myself, going to my happy place. It's usually being alone and doing something quiet. But I'm also, again, not shy about doing stuff. So despite being an introvert, I don't have any anxiety about hanging out with people and doing stuff with people. I obviously, you know, here I am as my son laughed at me and made fun of me for, I do a podcast and I put my thoughts out here for all of you to consume every single week, good or bad. I'm just throwing it out there. And so for me, the idea of social anxiety, it's been an intellectual concept in my head. It's something that I understood on a very basic level, but I don't think I've ever had a real grasp on what it fully entails and how life-changing it is, how limiting it is for some people, that it defines what choices they make and where they're willing to go and things that they're willing to do. And I still don't think I have a full grasp of any of that at this point. I've just gotten a glimpse of, oh, it's like that. Oh, okay. I get some of it, but
you
I still
asked literally any of your kids.
But I don't. No, because
except Jacob,
I've had social anxiety when I was a kid, but not to that degree. Not, I mean, like I'm uncomfortable. You know, when I was growing up, uncomfortable with new situations, and was always afraid of embarrassing myself because from my childhood, even minor embarrassments to myself are things that have been burned into my memory and I will never forget. And to me, they were ultimately so crushing and humiliating that I don't even know how I got through them. And yet, looking back on them in retrospect, despite the strong emotion associated with them, it's minor stuff. It's teeny tiny stuff. I misspoke. So what? And yet, to me, that was this, at the time, crushing event. But even then, it wasn't, I don't know. I didn't see it the way I see this. So, it's new. It's new and different. So, I learned something. All right. Next up, the unnamed history segment.
Don't know much about history.
Okay. Again, I don't even remember I don't even remember what podcast I was listening to when this one came up. It is the Roman water curses at Bath. And what podcast would that even have been on? If someone heard this same podcast and wants to remind me of what I was listening to, I suppose I could just do a Google search on the podcasts I listen to, but lazy. But it was a whole bit about, this may have been Curious Cases of Rutherford and Fry again. Weird. But I don't remember. All right. Going back to the Roman occupation of England way back in the, well, the Roman occupation of the British Isles, way, way back. So a couple thousand years ago. And,
back when there were British Isles.
Yes. Right. There's still British Isles.
There's one.
No. There's still the British Isles.
No. No.
Yeah, because the big one is Great Britain, and the little one is Lesser Britain.
Nope.
Yes, and part of the Great Britain is on the little, it's on Northern Ireland. It's, alright, you know what, I'm not arguing with him.
Nope.
Alright, so back during the Roman occupation of the British Isles, the Romans discovered the community of Bath, which is known for its hot springs. And
really?
Thus,
no way.
And thus is where we get the word Bath, is from the town, because there was a lot of bathing going on in Bath. And there was apparently at the time a Roman tradition of water curses. And what they would do is if someone has wronged you, you would essentially write a prayer to the gods. Usually you picked a god, but a prayer to the gods that you would inscribe on a stone. And it would be, a prayer to the gods that says, "Dear gods, find the person who stole my cloak, and whoever they may be, I wish this upon them." And then you would list some awful curse that you would wish death upon them, or you would wish that their feet would turn inward, or that, that they would die of the flu, or that they would, but you would wish
back
terrible
when people, died of the flu.
Oh God, the death toll from the flu this year is actually pretty bad. So.
Is it?
Yes. You insensitive jerk.
Is it all those anti-vaccination people?
No.
Oh.
But, although I'm sure there's a lot of them. And so the whole point was that, and it was on most of them. Most of the things that people wrote these about was stuff that had been stolen from them. So, you know, when you have your boots stolen, or someone's taken your favorite drinking vessel, or someone stole money from your home, or it's usually someone that stole something. And so you would inscribe your curse on a stone, and then once you inscribe your curse, you then throw it into the water. And the waters of Bath were just ripe for people to throw stuff into because it was a place that people went to on a regular basis. And, you know, this big open water where people congregate. So you'd throw your prayer in there, your curse. And then you would let the gods take care of the evildoer. And so they've found a bunch of these. That's, you know, Bath is a great place for them. They've gone diving and they've found a ton of these water curses, at the bottom of Bath. And sometimes it's, you know, it's because, you know, your spouse ran off with someone else and now you're wishing a curse upon the both of them. But usually it was somebody stole something from you. And what struck me about these water curses, it was the Roman era equivalent of the open Facebook post of, "To whoever stole my bike that was chained up at the corner of," it's the exact same thing except, you know, the ones today we don't wish horrible murderous death upon people or plagues of locusts or, you know, the things we wish upon them is we either wish them ill in a much more minor way, or we sarcastically hope that they really enjoy it in a way that we hope will, if we hope that the person will spot it and then feel terribly, terribly guilty for what they've done, which A, they will never see your post, and B, even if they did, they would not feel guilty in the least because they stole your, they knew what they were doing. Come on. But it was the exact same thing. I mean, like, again, you know, "To whoever stole my favorite drinking vessel, I hope," and it's the exact same stuff.
God, what a passive-aggressive curse, though.
Just 2,000 years later, but the exact same thing. And it was just really weird. And they never made that comparison in the podcast. They, like, just kept going on about the archaeological significance of this and, you know, the interesting things that we can determine about their society and all of that. And I'm like, the whole time I'm listening, I'm like, yeah, people still do that. We still do the exact same thing. We just don't, We just are way too lazy to inscribe it in stone.
So wait, whoa.
I mean, like you thought it was bad that we stopped writing letters? No, we've stopped inscribing things in stone so that they can still be found underwater 2,000 years later.
Whoa. Are you saying that Facebook is just a ripoff of water rocks?
Yes. Facebook is completely stolen from the Roman water rocks. Exactly correct. All right. That's the end. There's still a couple of things left on my list, but we're way over time, so I'm just gonna...
What?
I'm just gonna do true fingertips.
Whoa.
Because we normally cut off at 30 minutes to 40 minutes here, and then we do another 30 to 40 minutes of Podomatics, and then anywhere from 15 minutes to another 30, 40 minutes of Listener Betrayal, so...
Okay, but then what about all those times that I interrupted you and broke your silence?
Oh, no, that's fine. Once we take that out, it's only going to convert to shortening this down about 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes.
Okay.
All right, so, but I am going to go ahead and cover these things so that I can get them off my list. So, really quick, uncomfortable topics. I was going to talk about gerrymandering, and mostly, go listen to the 538 Gerrymandering Project. Every Thursday for 6 weeks, they came out with an episode about gerrymandering in the United States, and it was absolutely fascinating, and I think you guys should all listen to it. If you're interested in politics
at all,
it's really interesting.
Listen, I promise you, I'm not boring, but there's this really great podcast out there about gerrymandering.
Wait, no, it's a statistics podcast that is doing a focus on gerrymandering.
You're right, you're totally helping your case that you're not boring.
Okay, good. Because you guys should check it out. Because there are a lot of subtleties to the whole idea of gerrymandering that I didn't realize. For those of you who are unfamiliar, gerrymandering is the drawing of district lines, voting electoral lines, drawing them in such a way that favors one group or one party over another, and has been used historically, traditionally, to marginalize minority votes.
Did you know that housing project, speaking of gerrymandering, did a manual gerrymander?
Oh, yeah.
And that's why in a lot of, quote, upper-class neighborhoods, it's only white people, because even to this day, that's all that people will let move in there?
Yes. Yes, that's actually...
So it's a physical gerrymander.
That is a great uncomfortable topic. Yeah, it's the redlining of the United States when they decided what property values... should be assigned to different areas, and basically, yeah, they intentionally drew the lines around the minority neighborhoods and marked them as being worth less because they had minorities in them, and it has shaped the housing market and the fortunes and futures of minority and white people for decades, and it is phenomenal that we ever... I understand that it happened because we've done a lot of terrible things.
Oh, actually, can I correct your vernacular here? Denotationally incredible, not actually like good. That's great, incredible.
Right. No. Incredible just means yes. It is
unbelievable,
stunning that we have allowed it to continue so long, and in fact that we have such a problem getting people to even recognize that it was a problem. So, gerrymandering, the Gerrymandering Project from 538, just one simple example is the idea that there is a thing about intentionally creating majority-minority districts, meaning if within an area you can create a district that is majority minority population, so that minorities there will have the majority and can thus elect minority representatives if they want. If you have the ability to create such a district, from the Supreme Court, it says that the Voting Rights Act kind of mandates that if you can do it, you should do it. Thus, you will get greater minority representation. And that would seem like a really good thing for minorities, in that it will increase their representation, in elected government. But it turns out that Republicans are really, really, really in favor of this, and Democrats in general are not. And you would think, okay, since we view Democrats as being traditionally the refuge of minority voters, why? And it turns out that, oh, because when you do that, when you create a majority-minority district and you concentrate them all into one area, yes, they will probably be able to elect minority representatives, and that's awesome for them, but you have now just concentrated all this Democratic vote in one area, because most minorities will be Democratic. I mean, the majority of them will be Democratic. And thus, then of the people left over who aren't minority but are still in that district, well, there'll still be some percentage of them who are Democratic. And by the end, you have like a 70, 75% Democratic district. You've now concentrated all these votes, which means you've wasted a bunch of votes, which means that the remainder of the state or the remainder of the region now has less Democrats in it and is more likely to have less Democratic seats overall. So Republicans love the whole idea of creating these majority-minority districts because, okay, yeah, it means there's more minority representatives, but it also means that there's less Democrats overall, and so therefore they're all in favor of it. Whereas Democrats have all sorts of great reasons for saying, but yes, you get more minority representation, but it also means that they will continue to be marginalized because they are less likely to ever be in actual power. Their party is going to be the minority party forever, so therefore, having representatives doesn't help much if you don't have the power to do anything with that representation.
Instead of just concentrating your Democrats in one area for, you know, those two small representative districts, sometimes they just scatter all the Democrats in different districts so that you get, instead of half and half, you get 8 Republican districts and then 2 Democratic districts.
Right. The nuances of how gerrymandering works in this country is phenomenal. And the goals of all sorts of people who want to get rid of gerrymandering entirely, even those people, they all agree that, yes, we need to get rid of gerrymandering, but they don't even agree on what that means. Does that mean that we are trying to come up with the simplest lines that we're just kind of dividing up into, you know, big square chunks of state? Or does it mean that we're drawing lines?
Computer generate them by population.
Well, but does it mean that we want to keep communities of interest together so that, you know, so that this particular suburb stays together as a voting block? I mean, when you have, you know, a big city in the middle of your state, well, that city has a huge population, and sometimes it's simpler to simply divide the city up so a chunk of the city goes to a different district. And that way all their populations are even and we've kind of divided them. I mean, are you trying to create fair districts, competitive districts? Are you trying to, you know, who knows? There's so much to it. So anyway, if you're interested in politics and gerrymandering at all, go listen. Because even though he made fun of me, let's note that he's been more engaged on this topic than almost anything else in this show. So, well, except for blowing people up with a laser.
See, but the thing this
comes in second to vaporizing human beings for Aiden.
Look, well, I mean, that's always top priority for me, but aside from that, I do give my dad a lot of crap for being boring and being a nerd, but I'm right there with him.
I thought we'd be way better if you just ended your sentence before the next clause. It would just be.
I know I give him a lot of crap for being a nerd and being boring.
Next topic. All right.
But no, like, I actually care about a lot of these topics. I just.
You don't have to fess up to it.
Yeah, no, I.
You can continue to mock me. It's cool.
I mean, I'm not going to stop.
Okay.
Look at me go!
Thank God. And then the last thing that I was going to do, and we'll just make it very quick. Roku! There, that was quick. Roku, I was just going to talk about Brooklyn Nine-Nine again, because I love this show so much. But there's
Made
really.
Me cry. Screw Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
There's nothing to really discuss about it other than, you know, just like the last two times I've brought it up. I love this show. Although, the way they handled, what is her name? Melissa Fumero, who plays Amy Santiago on the show. The way they handled her pregnancy in season 3.
Oh my god, brilliant.
Is hysterical. I noticed
Although
that,
you and Eli were annoying about it.
Well, cause I know.
Also, spoiler alert.
I noticed. Well, it's not, this isn't really a spoiler. Because I just happened to notice halfway through the season that I'm like, hey, you know, they are intentionally putting stuff in front of her belly all the time. Is she pregnant? I bet she was pregnant. And so I bring this up, and now, every time we're watching, me and Eli both will, oh, look, she's got a folder in front of her. Oh, look, she's hiding behind a desk. Oh, look, and Aiden's just getting pissed off because Aiden hates it when people talk during TVs and TV shows and movies.
No, he much prefers to be stone quiet with no commentary. That's Aiden.
Aiden would never dream of talking during a movie.
I love talking during movies because I like thinking out loud and putting my two cents in. I don't like the repetition of A, jokes, and B, information that adds nothing to the situation.
But it turns out that we looked it up after seeing a couple episodes in a row, and we're like, yeah, they're definitely covering up. We looked it up, and sure enough, yeah, she was pregnant during that season, and that's exactly what's going on. And then they actually
had an excuse for her to pretend to be pregnant, quote-quote.
And it was very funny. So, anyway, that's it.
Is this
it.
Even believable?
Yeah, is this... Do you think anyone's going to buy this? All right. And then also the show Travelers. I just got through season 2, and Travelers is an awesome sci-fi... time traveling sort of, well, I mean, it is time travel, but it's a weird type of time travel. And I highly recommend it.
It is
really cleverly done. It's a well-made show that they established the rules of time travel and they are working within their own time frame and being extremely consistent. And I really like that. It stars Eric McCormick from Will and Grace as the lead. But it's a great cast, and I was hooked after season 1. Now season 2 was just as good, and they have left it in a spot where I cannot wait to see what happens in season 3. So if you like sci-fi, if you like time travel, Travelers is a great Canadian sci-fi TV show that you should really check out. There, I got through every single thing on my list, which means it's now time for the
Pod-O-Matic!
Oh, try it again. Automatic.
You had one job.
You shoved me out of my chair. What was I supposed to do? I couldn't even reach R2. He shoved me onto the floor so he could get the mic. Hot dog, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Podomatic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Podomatic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. God, I was hoping I could get all the way through it. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, go on, ask. Where do these topics come from?
Well,
that's where you come in. You want to hear me?
Notice how it's been 216 episodes and he still doesn't have his, script memorized.
You want to hear me hate Ron about something? Send your question or topic to me by email or better yet, in a private message on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. I will add it to my Podomatic list because Podomatic is about whatever you want it to be. Phew! All the way through. And our first one is 68. Aww. 68, or as George Carlin says, you do me and I'll owe you one. I know. Classless. Completely classless. Oh, speaking of classless, it's Kyle.
Sort of like us today.
Kyle says, what was the 80s musical artist or group that you enjoyed the most?
Beastie Boys.
And what about the 80s artist or group that you enjoy the most today?
It's Beastie Boys for Dad, both times.
I did not appreciate Beastie Boys back in the day. They were very late 80s, I think. But
you're lying to me.
I did not enjoy that. I mean, they had the one song, and we all thought that they were a bunch of party animals. And I did not realize the musical complexities of the Beastie Boys. I love the Beastie Boys.
The musical complexities of the Beastie Boys.
Have you listened to Paul's Boutique?
Sentence you said.
You have not listened. No. No, you don't know, and you're not allowed to judge.
The musical complexity.
At the time, NXS, I mean, I loved NXS. I loved U2. I had the Billy Joel double album that I listened to until it fell apart, and then I bought another one. Late in high school, Guns N' Roses was big. Oh, God, Squeeze, REM, that was going into college. The one that I did not discover until college, and they didn't even really become big until about 1990, was when they had their first, well, maybe 89? But they might be Giants. They Might Be Giants had albums in the 80s, but they didn't, and they were known among people around me, but I wasn't actually exposed to it until Birdhouse and Your Soul made it on MTV. And that would have been about 1989 or 1990.
See, now we're talking about musical complexity.
I love They Might Be Giants. That was probably
they're
the
even
one,
better in concert.
Probably the one I enjoy most today is They Might Be Giants. Although, Beastie Boys has given me a good run for its money. That was a good choice. So,
okay, so then why, how dare you?
How dare I what?
I threw out Beastie Boys and I got chastised.
No, because I didn't enjoy them the most then.
Mm-hmm.
But I do enjoy them a lot now. And you said, no, you insisted, no. Most then and most now. And then mocked me when I said musical complexities, because you're a bad person.
Brass Monkey.
Oh, that Funky Monkey. I love Brass Monkey.
It has literally the same melody for 3 minutes.
No.
Complexity.
Oh, God, you do not appreciate. Yes.
No. I don't appreciate what?
You don't appreciate rap music. It's because you're racist.
I appreciate good rap music.
And
the Beastie Boys isn't rap.
Well, yes, the Beastie Boys is rap, but it's not racist because they're white. That's the... Never mind.
You can be racist against white people. That is a completely ableist kind of statement. How dare you?
Number 4 is from Phoebe. And Phoebe says, how long do you think you would be alone without any conversation or interaction with... How long do you think you would be alone without... any conversation or interaction with other people, including online or text, before you became very unhappy being alone and needed to seek out company.
Joke's on you. I'm already unhappy being alone.
Oh, it's funny because he's not kidding. All right. I don't know. I could probably go a good solid 24 hours without worrying too much about, like if I knew my family was away somewhere, but I had to stay behind to work and, you know, I knew we were going to be out of contact, that kind of thing. I can handle 24 hours. I could handle, if I knew that this situation was coming and I knew I was going to be like, let's say I'm in, you know, I've taken a sabbatical to the Antarctic, and it's going to be a few days. If I knew it and I could prepare for it, and I knew I was going to be isolated for some scientific experiment or whatever, I could probably handle easily 3 days, because I'd be prepared. I would have brought books. I would have brought paper and pencil and dice and stuff that I can use to just, you know, speculate and do game design and read and hang out.
Okay.
Three days I'm thinking pretty safe.
Okay, no.
Maybe
no,
longer,
no, no.
But maybe not.
Think about it like this. Let's put it into an outside of the realm of physics kind of situation. Let's say that one morning you don't wake up and you've slipped into a coma.
Okay.
But your coma dream is you sitting in a room. You have amenities, but no contact with anyone. At what point do you completely not be able to handle the loneliness anymore?
Yeah, I'm thinking 3 days.
3 days?
3 days is when it would start to really get to me, I think. But I'm not sure.
I think I'd enjoy being alone for the first two, at least.
Right, exactly. Like, I have no problem with being alone for a while.
I think I'd get bored after the first hour, though.
Uh-huh.
And then...
You said amenities. You probably have a video game.
I mean, yeah.
You just can't play online with other people. So
92.
You know what? I would spend 96 hours straight just playing Candy Crush, and I'd be fine. So 92 is... I'm just kidding. I can't play Candy Crush for that long.
Talvin.
This is from Talvin. Talvin says, say something with an Irish accent.
It's funny because I can't.
Oh, come on. Say something with an Irish accent. Top of the morning to you. See, I can do that. Now say it with a Scottish accent.
Top of the morning.
Now say it with an Australian accent. Top of the morning to you, mate. All right, I'm good.
Eh?
Canadian. Top of the morning to you, eh? What's this all about? Whoops, that was 43. If you tip it, the dice roll over. Be careful.
Isn't that true for literally anything containing die? If you tip it, the dice roll over?
Yeah, well, okay. Yes, I just wasn't expecting it. All right, this is from Calvin.
To be fair, the laws of physics are very sudden and aren't fully explored yet.
This is also from Calvin. Reparations for slavery, because we like light topics here. How would you go about handling that in an equitable manner? Oh, reparations. How would you go about reparations for slavery, Aiden? What's your thought?
Why are you putting this one on me?
Okay, because look, I mean,
you could. I mean, of course, you can't do it today, because that just looks racist.
That's right. Giving money to black people, that would be racist.
I'm sorry for slavery.
Yeah.
No.
I am really sorry about owning your ancestors,
but if you did it,
here's $20.
If you did it back in the day, you could give them, I don't know, a piece of land, some money to get their life on track.
Well, and that's what we're, well, we gave them 40 acres and a mule. What more do they want? So, yeah, this is the problem is that, reparations, in what sense of reparations? I mean, is money, you know, handing over money going to erase the legacy of not just slavery, but of systemic racism that we've built up ever since to make up for the fact that, well, we're not allowed to own you, but trust me, we can still make sure that you never get on top. Or do you take that money, that investment that instead of just handing over cash for reparations, you know, is there a way to use it to battle racism in general? To, you know, step one, ensure that all public school children in this country have access to the exact same resources regardless of where they come from. To investigate the lingering effects of racism, the systemic racism in this country, and how to combat them in ways that are effective, that will actually do something. I'm no expert, and also, at this point, is this me as a white person saying, well, you know, we have all this money and power. Let's, as white people, decide the best way to make sure that we make up for racism. Is it even ours?
Sounds kind of racist.
It's hard. I mean, again, if it were up to me, if I were the one making decisions, it would be public awareness. Funding education. That would be a huge step. It's just making sure everyone has access to the same resources coming up would be amazing. But it's not enough. I don't know what is enough. I have no idea where to go with it.
Sadder by the second.
I know, that's why I'm rolling. 13. All right, that time I didn't even tip it. I just shook it a little bit and the dice still flipped over. Is that part of physics?
Yes.
Oh, god darn it. All right, 13 is from Phoebe.
If you have to ask, it is.
Phoebe says, have you ever run a paranoia adventure where all the characters did not start out as red-level troubleshooters, but were on some other level? Did that have any effect on the overall quality or experience of the game? Yes, I have done that. I've done one where everyone started off as orange. When we were much younger, I played one where everyone started as blue, but that, again, it was not a great setup for the game that had other complications entered into it. And so that one didn't work out. But we played one where everyone was orange. I played other ones where one or two or half the group was orange and the others were red. I've done ones where people have received field promotions or field demotions. So they've either gone up or down a rank while we're playing. And the problem with it is either it has no effect whatsoever on the game. No one seems to even care, all right? Like right now, the game we're in. There, I just cut out something very spoilery from this, because it applies to the game we're playing right now. But like I say, the people that it either has no effect whatsoever, and everyone just goes about their normal paranoia craziness, killing each other left and right, because that's what you do in paranoia, or it has turned very power trippy, where the minute someone gains authority over the others, for example, Phoebe, I once promoted your husband to orange, and it was the worst mistake I could have made because, oh man, he rode that power trip like nobody's business. I mean, like, immediately starts making demands of everybody else.
He rode that power trip like a white horse into battle.
Oh no, and it was, and I say it was a mistake, but it was actually really funny because, man, if there was anyone to promote to orange level and know mid-game, that they would make good use of that, oh, dude, Ron was it. That was the guy. But beyond that, other people, I've promoted them and nothing happens. Everyone treats them exactly the same. They act exactly the same. It is really hard to enforce, any kind of order out in the field. Once they get beyond the immediate reach of the computer and internal security, people just go nuts. Absolutely nuts. And then it's a free for all. So, I don't know, but yes, we've done that, and it's always crazy. I don't think it changed the nature of the game all that much at all. That is an 86. An 86 is, gosh darn it, I know, we did 68, now there it is, 86. 86 is from Kyle! Alright. Kyle says, Bedwetter Behead, Neil deGrasse Tyson, Will Wheaton, or Tom Cruise.
I got it.
Really think about it.
Got it.
I know at least one.
Okay, what do you got?
I kill Tom Cruise.
Okay.
I have my one night of passion with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Uh-huh.
And marry Will Wheaton.
Okay, I am very close. I would obviously marry Will Wheaton because Will Wheaton is close to my age and we have very similar interests.
You're right.
And
I think you're right. Switch around. Tom Cruise and Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Right. And Will Wheaton is very, he's kind of a pessimist. He's a bit of a downer. So being married to him would be, there would be some trying times, but I think we would complement each other well and it would be fine. But then, yeah, I would behead Neil deGrasse Tyson because, I find him pompous and he annoys me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly my
I mean, because at this point we're down to, you know, we've already decided we're going to marry Wheaton, so it is just having a night of passion with either Neil deGrasse Tyson or Tom Cruise.
And Tom Cruise is...
He's Tom Cruise!
By looks alone, is the obvious better choice.
Tom Cruise is Tom Cruise. I mean,
although he is just as pompous.
Although, I mean, look, for the stories you're going to tell later, this is all about the stories, I mean, if you're bragging to people that you had sex with Tom Cruise, or bragging to people that had sex with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
It doesn't need to necessarily be a brag. Just, well, I mean, like, oh yeah, you know, this one time I hooked up with this, oh yeah, you know, I once hooked up with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Now, see, and that's what I'm saying is if it's going to be for the story of it, Tom Cruise or Neil deGrasse Tyson, either one of those is a great story.
I mean, Tom Cruise is like a movie celebrity. So, like, us two dudes, it could be believable that he might sleep with a dude, but Neil deGrasse Tyson, now that!
Well, it's not even whether it's believable or not believable. It is the idea that you hooked up with Neil deGrasse Tyson? How the hell did that happen?
Exactly!
It's the under what circumstances were you hanging out with Neil deGrasse Tyson?
And things escalated to a point!
Yeah. Whereas, on the other hand, if you go Tom Cruise, then you can say,
oh yeah, we were on cocaine at a party.
You made sweet, sweet sloppy love with Maverick from Top Gun.
Well, no, actually, he made sweet, sweet love to you because he's a very forward man.
Yeah, he was a little pushy in that film. So, 68 again. Weird coincidence. 02. 20. No, 02.
Your 200.
200. It is Kyle. And Kyle says, I think that Trump neither intended to be nor wants to be president. He did it as a publicity thing that got out of control. With that in mind, what are the odds that he doesn't run for re-election?
I'd say fairly good at this point.
I'm looking at about 35% says that he doesn't run for president again. If someone can convince him that he can't win, if someone can convince him that the poll numbers are such that he won't win if he runs for office again, then, well, and chances are that that's what's going to happen. Is if he runs again, chances are he probably won't win, but it depends on who they put against him. It really depends on who the Democrats have against him, what happens in between.
Statistics do show that the incumbent has a way higher chance of winning than...
Right. So if he thinks that there's a significant chance that he will lose, then I will guess that there's a 100% chance at that point that he will back out. He would rather drop out early and come up with whatever reasons for dropping out that he needs. Like, basically, look...
I need to go mow my one of my many golf courses.
Look, I've had my 4 years. I have been the greatest president of all time. Look at all the things I've accomplished in just this 4 years. I've done my part. I don't need to prove myself anymore.
And then
it's time for me to retire and be with my family.
When he retires, and if the next president starts undoing what he's already done, he can start complaining about how everyone is out to get him.
So
it's a win-win for him.
I think it's about 35% right now,
mm-hmm.
which is about his approval rating right now, is that he has to believe that he will win or he won't run this time. Because, yeah, before it was he'll run, he'll lose, and that'll be fine.
Well, I mean, hold on. There's a higher chance of him running because he's amazingly stable.
He is. He's a very stable genius. Yeah, I agree with you that I don't believe that he wanted to be president. I think he wanted to run for president. He was lining up. You know, talking about the next season of The Apprentice. He was lining up the possibility of Trump TV. He was in talks for having his own, you know, political entertainment news, whatever it is, channel. He was, I think this was going to be the platform by which he launched the next phase of his entertainment,
empire.
Quote, thank you. And then the fact that he actually won caught everybody involved by surprise.
Including himself.
Yeah. And so now he's riding this out. But, it'll be,
I'll go get the message. Don't worry.
So, I think he didn't want to be president in the first place. I don't think he likes being president. I think he likes people telling him he's being a good president, but doesn't actually like being president. And so I would put better than even money on the idea that he is going to find an excuse to step down and say, hey, I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. I'm the greatest president ever. I did more in my presidency than any 12 presidents combined. Time for me to go home. Peace out. And that'll be the end of Trump as president. That's my guess. I'm hoping, but you know, we'll see how it pans out. 45. And 45 is a number that is divisible by 9 and 5.
No way!
It is. I just proved that mathematically, while you weren't here. It's from Kyle. And Kyle said, we know Smurfs are misogynist. Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah.
But have you heard the theory that they're racist? No, I haven't.
Yeah.
Papa Smurf is an authoritarian that prevents owning private property and demands everyone follow his rules. And they are constantly fighting Gargamel, who looks and acts like several terrible Jewish stereotypes. Racist, right? Okay.
And actually they're not by choice misogynistic, according to the new Smurfs movie.
Right.
The new Smurfs movie proves that there are actually two portals that create Smurfs.
Right.
One of them spawns males, and the other one spawns females, while our current Smurfette was created as a Gargamel experiment, while there are female Smurfs elsewhere. No word yet if they can inter-reproduce.
Okay. Except that the creator of the Smurfs basically has written statements, interviews, etc., where he talks about how women are worthless pieces of garbage
and they're inferior
to men in every way.
Are you going to look me in the eyes and tell me that Mickey Mouse is an anti-Semite?
And thus, Smurfette is a representation of all of the vain, evil, selfish aspects that are women.
But are you going to tell me that because Walt Disney was an anti-Semite that Mickey Mouse is too?
No. No, because...
So you can't pin the sins of a creator on his creations.
The creator of the Smurfs specifically said he created Smurfette to be a representation
right.
of the inferiority of women. Now, is modern Smurfs in the movies with... I mean, look, Could John Oliver possibly be involved in something racist? Obviously not. So therefore, I mean...
All I'm saying is that by the sins of your father, right?
Yeah. So, well, okay, so the fact that I owned slaves means that you are guilty of slave-owning racism. That would be...
Okay, just making sure we're all on the same page.
Hypothetical. Obviously, we didn't really own slaves. So, alright, that's it for the Podomatic. Guess what? It's time for GLaDOS to give us a recap of this week's episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2018. I screwed it up last week and never fixed it. 2018 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is Weezer's in the Garage, Wonderful World by Sam Cooke, She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them on my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to help out Nerd Pride, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use, and write me a nice review, or write me a crappy review as long as it comes with 5 stars, because that's what they use to power their algorithm. Watch out every week. Oh, wait, no. If you want to do something even nicer for this podcast, there you go. Recommend it to your friends, because if you're enjoying it, just pick one friend, one nerdy, nerdy friend. You all have them. And recommend this podcast to them, because if you're enjoying it, spread the word. Let them enjoy it as well. Word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. Remember, I am always looking for your listeners to do my work for me. Don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, send it to me and save me all of that grueling research. I told you 216 was going to be an easy one, but 217? I got nothing on that crap. So, get me stuff. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. Sign up there, send me a message. We'll hang out together. We will become best friends in the world. We'll have fun.
That's a bear.
And now it's time for listener betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to the forums and to Facebook and post up, hey guys, I am recording anything that you post there. I will read off at the end of the podcast, which is what I'm doing right now. And since this is a Monday in the middle of the day, I am hoping to get some response, but it's an unusual time, so we'll see. I'm going to start off with my forums, where I post up and said, I'm recording, it's a snow day, how's the weather been in your area, how are you dealing with it? And Kyle says, unbelievably, Central Texas had a snow day last week when temperatures sunk down to 10 degrees and we got a quarter inch of ice on everything. Holy crap. That is drastic for, well, yeah, especially for Texas where they have no snow removal equipment, they have no plans to deal with it. Literally, if they get a bunch of ice on stuff, they have no choice but to hide until it just melts, because what else are they going to do? So, he said, we played Clank, which is my new favorite board game. Oh, I saw that. I saw on Facebook that you guys were playing Clank, and your description of it sounded absolutely fascinating. Color me interested. I think that sounds awesome. So, if there wasn't a snow day, were you just not going to have an episode this week? Was this God's way of saying, do a fucking podcast, Mike? Actually, no. The blizzard warnings had everything canceled last night, so I already knew there was no school today. Well, there was already no school anyway. It was just going to be a teacher's conference. So the kids were staying home, but my wife was going to go to school. And they canceled the conference, so I knew everyone else was home. And so I was praying for just enough snow that I can call in sick myself and play snow day and stay home with everyone. So I was counting on that, and sure enough, it came true, so that's pretty good. Anywho, how's Starfinder? Dude, Starfinder's the best. Well, I'm hoping we're playing later today. Because I am so excited about Starfinder. It's really good. Kyle says, I just made characters for my new group. They were hesitant about the setting, so they picked more relatable classes. Mechanic, technomancer, which is kind of like sorcerer. Operative, which is a thief, and soldier, which is a fighter. However, I was delighted that none of them chose humans. Gabe's the mechanic. I'm trying to convince him to make his drone a robot velociraptor with a saddle and a cannon for its head. Okay, that would be super funny. Noah is our mechanic, and he's been playing around with his drone design. With this being a new game, I kind of, through the first couple of sessions, I kind of gave them leeway to make changes to their characters if they needed to as they sort of learn the rules and get better about it. They've all been actually very excited about digging through the rule books and finding what can be done and what can't, and playing around with things.
I have a cannon.
Noah came up with like over a dozen different possible drone designs, and he's like sketched out pictures of them and laid out stats and tried to figure out which one he wants the most. So it's been pretty exciting. I love Starfinder. I understand the hesitation over the setting. The setting is tough because I haven't role-played sci-fi in ages. I mean, except for Shadowrun. Really haven't done a whole lot of sci-fi role-play. And even Shadowrun was mostly, it's near future. It's not nearly this level of space opera. And so this has been exciting, but also a little intimidating. And I am telling you, it was getting into the first adventure path. The first adventure path is very well written. Jeff Hawes gives a warning about the ending of it. Just make sure you've read very, very carefully and you know what's coming up as a game master and you know what the group is going to need to deal with. It's not an impossible thing, but just be ready. That's all. And I've done that, and I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, I get this. If I had gone into that being only a little prepared, might have been problematic. But no, I've seen it coming, and I'm also just excited to read the module. This adventure path, I'm just excited to read through the book. I've read through the whole thing probably like 3 times now. Love this thing. And I'm telling you, the first couple of sessions we played when we were just doing the Into the Unknown, the introductory crap that came out before, you know, the free PDFs. We were doing Into the Unknown, and it was tough to click with the setting. I mean, the kids were having a good time, but it just, as a game master, I wasn't feeling like I really had it. I didn't feel like I was embodying this setting or embodying the people in it. And then when we got to the adventure path, I don't know if it's that I'd had more time to read stuff. I don't know if it's the adventure path was inspiring me or the fact that we finally got the Alien Archives book and that inspired me. But something about it, suddenly Starfinder became very, very real for me. And I am so excited about playing. I love this game. So it was very cool. I think your kids made some wonderful choices. We wound up, we don't have any spellcasters in our group at all, which, they are probably going to be in for some trouble later. But hey, that's on them. They've chosen to play Pathfinder before without a healer in the group, and they came out just fine. So, things will happen. We'll see what goes on. But anyway, love Starfinder. And then that's it. Kyle is the only one to pitch in on my forums because, again, it's the middle of the day on a Monday. So that's what happens. But we will go to Facebook. And Facebook, I have, as I could have predicted, responses from Nelly and from Sarah Beth, so this is cool. And Nelly opens up with, on a Monday? What? Yes, on a Monday. Yeah, because of the snow day, which I knew we were going to have no school, and so I was kind of counting on this. And the release date for my podcast is, it is released every Monday. That's just how it comes out. So I will have this done and edited and out before midnight tonight, usually. I record on the weekend, and then I release just moments after midnight, so it's technically on Monday every week. But this one, because of the snow day, we record late. I'll get it all put together later. It'll come out sometime this evening, and it'll still be on a Monday, so it's all consistent. Nellie says, I live in Seattle. This year, we got about a half inch of snow while I was driving home. Oh, this was, by the way, I said, now recording episode 216, post here to join the podcast. Relate your weather horror stories if you feel up to it. Okay, and so she says, they got a half inch of snow while I was driving home. The 10-minute trip took an hour and a half. I saw 8 abandoned cars and 3 in the ditches. That is my horror story. I hope to never have to experience it again. Oh, that is terrible. driving home through something like this is just a nightmare. I mean, now we've got, you know, a foot of snow out here right now, and we've got, you know, we went out grocery shopping before the snow started. We've got plenty of food in the house. We've got nowhere to be. And so we're just holding it up here and relaxing and having a good time. Like I say, later, we're gonna make some chicken nachos for dinner, and we're gonna play some Starfinder. We're gonna have a good old time. And but there's a section of our highway outside of town here that has been completely shut down because there are so many cars trapped on the highway and in the ditches that you can't get through anymore. I mean, the snow is bad enough. And they're even having trouble with the plows because, well, there's cars in the way. And the people that got stuck out there, they have called in for help, and they've been told, okay, sit tight. There's nothing we can do for you right now. We'll get help to you as soon as we can. So these are people who are now spending hours in their car in the snow, just trapped there, watching it slowly pile up and bury them further. Holy crap. I mean, that's just got to be frightening as all get out, which is, as my wife reminded the kids this morning, this is why I tell you to make sure you always have warm clothes in the car. Make sure we always have blankets. Make sure we always have water and emergency supplies. Make sure that we're prepared in case we get stuck out there. And sure enough, man, this is exactly what that's for. Can you imagine be sitting out there with a foot of snow around you? Your car is completely trapped. You're in the middle of the highway. You're not even in a ditch. You're just on the road and you can't go anywhere. And the snow just keeps piling up and you've called the cops and they've told you, yeah. Well, nothing we can do. So sit tight. You're going to be all right. Okay. Hang on. We'll get there eventually, hours from now. Crazy. Sarah Beth posts up next and she says, I live in CNY, so Central New York. As you know, therefore, about 6 months out of the year are a weather horror story. Yeah, no, that's exactly true. So as a fun part of my synesthesia, I tend to see people as colors. This is unrelated to the weather, it looks like. I tend to see people as colors when I think of them, like an aura sort of around them. The people themselves aren't colored, but they have this aura. So you, for example, me, are a hunter green. All right, I can live with that. Dave is a pulsing blue, which I can picture. A bright blue, like a royal blue, vivid, I'm hoping. And Pat is a rich, beautiful brown, just to name a few. Aw. I can't believe I'm saying this, as usually people beg to know what color they are, and sometimes get all insulted as if I can control it. Assign each member of your family a color you would associate with them, and tell me why. Wow. That is... I've never quite thought of it that way, but let me look. Because three of them are right here. All right. Eli is a kind of a very rich, deep orange color. Orange was his favorite color growing up, and I've just always associated orange with him in that way. Whereas I think Aiden is very much a deep green, an emerald sort of green. It kind of matches his fluctuating eyes. His eyes are greenish, but sometimes gray, sometimes blue. He has those kind of eyes. But they look best when they're reflecting green, and they're very cool. So I've always associated green with Aiden. And then Jacob and Noah are similar to one another. Both of them are blue, but, whereas Jacob is a very serious, royal blue, almost a Facebook blue, our school colors blue, that kind of blue for Jacob, whereas Noah is a less serious, he's more of a sky blue, more of a more friendly, approachable sort of blue. That's what I would think. Which only leaves me my wife, and that's probably the hardest one. I would say that, you know, Lisa shifts. I want to say reddish, but not really. because no, she's more of a greenish, a brownish, and kind of an earth tone sort of but it shifts. It shifts really depending on what aspect of her I'm thinking of. I can't really pin that one down. And I would have to give it more thought. I feel weird speaking out loud on it. But anyway, okay, those are mine. So there you go. And I did that without pausing. I didn't even have to stop to think about it. I'm really proud of myself. Okay. So in reply to Sarah Beth's comment, Nellie says, do me. Okay. And then Sarah Beth says, you shimmer in teal and pink. Which, of course, why would you even say you shimmer in teal and pink? You're just feeding into it. You know she's going to love that. I mean, it's probably accurate. I'm sure you're not making this up, but God, just feed the ego on her. Of course she's in teal and pink. That's awesome. And of course, Nellie then replies with, three smiley faces with hearts in their eyes. So therefore, yeah, see, she appreciates that just as much as you thought she would. So that's pretty cool. All right. And then that's it. On that happy, friendly, loving note, we're all done for the week. So I appreciate you guys coming out and I appreciate you sticking with me for this long. And it's been an awesome time. I love you guys. I will see you next week. It's going to be great.